A virtue is something that is valuable even if it gives you nothing. A virtue persists without payment or compensation. Positive thinking is great, vital, useful, but it has to remain so even if it gets you nothing. Belief, truth, honor. If these exist only to get you something, you've missed the storming point.
Hey everybody, real quick before this episode starts. We are newly returned from Dragonsteel 2024. Firstly, I want to say thank you to everyone who came up and said hello to us at our booth at Dragonsteel. It was wonderful to see each and every one of you. I highly appreciate everyone who came to our booth. We recorded some content that'll be coming out in the near future. Secondly, at that convention, they released a new game that they're calling the Stormlight Lost Tales. It's a card collection game, and the gist of it is they gave you some cards you had to trade back and forth with people at the convention. The announcement that I wanted to make is over the next month, we are going to give out some card art from this Stormlight Lost Tales that we got at Dragonsteel. So I don't know if you can see that super well. I'll post some art overlay on the camera right now, but long story short, we want to send some of this art that we got from Dragonsteel to you guys as a thanks for our patrons. So if you're a patron or you want to be a patron, go ahead and go to our Patreon. I'll post about this at the same time this episode goes live, and you can fill out that Google form that I linked to you, receive some of this art. Thanks for supporting us, and here's the episode. Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 228, and as of time of recording this, Wind and Truth comes out in 5 days. By the time this is live, many of our listeners will have already finished said book. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. I've been thinking about that. I'm very excited for the coming week. I would phrase it as I am very excited to have had been to Dragonsteel Nexus. Because we leave for Dragonsteel Nexus in like 3 days from now. But when you're hearing this, when this podcast goes live, we will have already returned from said awesome experience, which I'm sure it will be. I'm very excited.
Paul, how are you?
Fantastic. As always, it just feels so great to be back in Wind and Truth. I'm on cloud nine. I'm so excited to get the full book. And I want to say something. I know that we have talked before or joked about me and Elliot's slow reading pace, having to pace ourselves. But as I'm reading these chapters, I feel like there's no better way to enjoy the book. It's so fantastic and rich that it just feels awesome getting to pick and dive into every detail.
Yes. So up until this point on the podcast, I have read everything that we've covered. With this book, I have only read through chapter 30, and I am not going to read it when it comes out next week or last weekend for when this goes live. And I will be reading blind. So if we are making dumb predictions throughout this podcast, please don't correct us in any comment sections or forums. We don't want to know. It doesn't matter if we talk 45 minutes on something that's completely irrelevant by two chapters from now. That's just going to be the format of this podcast. So if you're reading it blind with us, I'm very happy that you're here. Just a quick recap in case you missed last week. We have read every published work in the Cosmere besides White Sand, and we will feel free to talk about it on the podcast. So if you haven't read Elantris, if you haven't read Yumi and the Nightmare Painter, if you haven't read Sunlit Man, we will be referencing those on the podcast if they come up, if there's something relevant to those books in this one. That being said, Paul, do we have a patron?
We do. And interestingly enough, I chose a really cool mug today. Well, it's It's cool because it's a little special. It's just a pretty flowery mug that doesn't look like it belongs to me. And that's because it belongs to Alex. And it has a lovely A on the front, which I've actually covered up with the name. But this week, I'd love to introduce our patron, Jason, who is a surgeon. And I also wanted to point out that I caught a glimpse of Elliot's mug, which you really can't see mine. I don't know if y'all can see it all, but there's the bottom and tip of the A. But Elliot's mug also has just an A on it, which is really, that was not planned. Full coincidence. I bet mine is more special, though.
I feel left out.
Yeah, you need to go get an A mug.
I need to go get a mug. It is
also coincidentally the mug of my wife, whose name's also starts with A, and I have snatched her mug to use for the podcast as well.
Wow. Yeah, Trevor should really feel left out now.
True. Thank you, Jason. But,
yes, thank you to Jason. Much appreciated.
Paul, do you have two words for an excerpt or a summary of this episode? We're doing chapters 2, 3, and 4, by the way.
Yes. For these chapters, my highlight words are accidental resolution. And the reason that I chose these words are we are led to believe in, we'll talk about this further, but we are led to believe in chapter 4 that it's an accident that Kaladin talks to Hoid for as long as he does. We're led to believe that, and it was a really neat single chapter reveal that it was not at all an accident, that it had been planned the whole time. We get a great therapy session, great lesson taught, music lesson and life lesson. And it's very, very fascinating. So accidental resolution, because one, the Kaladin conversation with Hoid and the Kaladin conversation with Dalinar, I feel like we get a mental track of how Kaladin's resolution may be. I have to say may, because who knows what will happen. But it feels like we're having a story track set up for Kaladin. And it seems like it would be really beautiful resolution and very neat. I'd also like to tack resolution onto chapter 3 with Shallan and Kalak. It's the most we've ever really gotten a herald to just sit down and tell us things, which is awesome. I've waited 4.5 years for this.
Ever since they walked away from Talon and Damnation. All right, Elliot, do you have two words for this episode?
I do have two words. For this set of chapters, it was very obvious to me that the theme or kind of some nuggets that I was picking up out of all of these chapters pointed me towards the two words, ominously hopeful. There was so much in these chapters that seemed very hopeful for what's in the future. We had the lovely scene in chapter 2 where Kaladin's just hanging out with his family and playing blocks with Syl and his little brother. And even in like the Shallan chapters, we're getting, some casual chats with Kalak the Herald and Wit. And Kaladin gets another therapy session with Wit. And yet all throughout, I'm feeling like this undertone of ominous. There's just kind of this dark storm cloud hanging over all of this. And so while it seems kind of very uplifting right now, definitely feels like we're headed towards ominous.
I feel like Hoid in both chapter 3 and chapter 4 has gained a little bit more virtue since the last time we've seen him. He seems to be a little bit more insightful than your average Hoid conversation. I just wanted to point that out.
It definitely feels like in these two chapters, chapter 3 and 4, that Sanderson is kind of cutting the crap with a lot of these characters, Heralds and Hoid, who have always just played mind tricks and not given full hints or answers. They're finally relenting, finally getting a little bit of resolution.
Even the Shallan and Testament stuff, all this stuff that we've danced around for so many books, we just get like a 3 or 4 paragraphs where Shallan just spells it out for us. Yeah, I was pretending that Shardblade was a boring old Shardblade for that whole time. And just so many little casual reveals. I agree. We're cutting straight to it at the start of this book, I think.
Something that we mentioned on with me, David, and Tim is, especially in these first couple of early chapters, we felt like Brandon Sanderson was canonizing a lot of his words of Brandon that he's told us over the years. Like, we knew that Shallan's old shard blade wasn't pattern, but that was never explicitly said in the book. So there's some just kind of one-liners that come out from, you know, Kalak or Shallan or Dalinar or, you know, whoever, that are finally putting in the book something that, you know, fans have figured out over the years. But if you're not plugged in, or if you're just reading story 1 through 5 straight through, there's no way you would have known all that. So there's actually some things in here that we kind of already knew, but are being explicitly spelled out, like the Testament thing. So okay. When I read this chapter for the first time a couple months ago, I got concerned more than...
I know where this is headed.
I got concerned more than hopeful for Kaladin. Kaladin gets a nice, quiet scene with his family to start the book. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. Okay, well, this is supposed to come at the end of the book, not now. I need the story to be over before we get the quiet, calm scene with Auradin. Any thoughts?
I feel like one of two things is happening here. I'm with you, hence the ominously hopeful, because I could see it go two different ways. I could see this be setting up a bookend where here at the beginning, we're going to see peaceful, happily family Kaladin. And then at the end of the book, we're going to get like a reflection of that scene where we're going to get another family scene, maybe like, you know, missing one or two key players, sadly, or something like that. But a happy moment that kind of closes the book, whereas we just now opened with one. Or this could be setting up a very stark contrast for where the book opens versus where the book closes. And I don't know what direction Brandon's going to take it in, but it does seem like it's going to be one or the other based on how we've now started the story.
One thing I'd like to point out here as well, is this the chapter, or maybe it's the previous chapter that ends with... No, it's this one. Chapter 2 ends with it saying, Kaladin felt great. He has this conversation with Syl and with his mom, Hesina. His mom is just being stereotypical, sweet, and... what's the word I'm looking for? A mischievous mother, maybe. And it felt a little bit almost like this meet the parents moment for Syl. I don't know if y'all felt this way, but felt like Brandon's love letter to all the people out there who want the Kaladin and Sylphrena relationship. This felt like that. That it felt like the most that they might get, unless it happens somehow. I don't know how that would work. However, this was like pretty... it felt pretty intent to me to convey those emotions, the girlfriend Syl.
There were two specific lines that really sold it for me. I also noticed this, Paul. She kind of sidles up to him and rests her head on his shoulder. One. Two, she articulates her safe hands like towards him. And Kaladin's like, oh, has she always worn a glove instead of a safe hand sleeve? She never used to do that before.
Being full size more often.
Right. As well. So, yes. I also noticed this, Paul. I did not like it.
Whenever you said your initial point that you were like, I don't know if I like where this is going, that's what I actually thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to be like, are we going to see the book end with Kaladin and Syl exchanging vows? Is that what we're gonna have?
Oh my.
That would be interesting.
Oh my. I picked up on some of this too, that there was also the bit where like Syl's trying to get his mom to tell awkward stories about his childhood. Like that feels like a classic, you know, girlfriend trying to pry the fun stories out of the parents. Little odd, but there's a line later that for me felt like a Brandon speaking directly into the book. It's later on when they're talking to, maybe it's Shallan, maybe it's Kalak. And it very specifically, I think it's the narrator says, and the Nahel bond was not intimate in that way, but did share like important details between friends. It felt like a very specific kind of shutting down of that, I hope.
I also hope.
I feel pretty confidently that we're not going to continue having a romance trope between Kaladin and Syl. But I do think Brandon was intentionally acknowledging the people out there who want that and giving them, just toss them a little bone. Just a little, here's happy family. It lets you imagine maybe what that life could be like. I'm not sure. But I don't think that's where we're headed. We can talk more about it, but I want to compare this directly to Shallan's chapter, where I feel like we get very great, like it's one of my favorite relationship moments in Stormlight. I did not cringe. Thought it was very sweet and good.
Just real quick with our Shallan Kaladin thing, there are people who have just finished the entire book listening to this episode the day it goes live and either laughing at us hysterically or shaking their heads or whatever, that I just keep having in my mind half of our audience knows the outcome of everything that we're talking about, and we don't.
You're right. I'm sure people are laughing at us one way or the other here.
Super fast before we move off of this too, I want to say, if that does become a thing where it really does become a romance between Kaladin and Syl, I could get okay with that. I could see where that would bring some things to the story. Just real quick in defense of why I hope that's not true is I think that would take away from the relationship that Kaladin and Syl already have. Like to have a strong friendship and like almost like brothers in arms kind of a thing that they have, where they each fill a particular purpose in the role that they have as a Knight Radiant. And to introduce romance to that would, one, complicate that a ton, but then also I think cover over a lot of what I think has been really strong character building and relationship building between the two of them. And it would kind of take all of that in a very different direction, which I could be okay with. I think it would subtract from what they have.
I would be more okay with it if it had been set up sooner. And if it hadn't felt like Kaladin was raising a child early, like Syl was very childlike to start.
Yeah.
And they've grown together, which is like, yeah, you know, great. That's the whole part of the story. But I would have been more okay with it if Syl had been more mature sooner. But we'll see what happens.
We will see.
The wind is talking. Someone want to talk about that?
So this was the question for me. Who is the wind? I feel like reading this chapter, while I was reading it, I had a lot of guesses. It was like, this could be Honor. This could be, I feel like it's hinted later on that it might be Ba'ed O'Mishram. There's a lot of hints. There's a lot of stuff. But very peculiar. I feel like I wasn't expecting any new power or new feeling power to be set up. But so far I'm enjoying it. I'm not certain what's gonna happen, what the wind is. I assume that we're gonna figure that out in Shinovar.
Whoever's talking specifically does say, come to me, listen to the Bondsmith. What's the bondsman saying? Go to Shinovar. So I think that hypothesis is solid.
I wasn't expecting this because we have so many players in our game right now. We have so many different teams and different entities that we have to not forget about. We've got all the unmade, which I still feel like I don't have a great understanding about what the unmade are or even who all of them are. We've got the sleepless who are still out there. We've got Dawn Shards. We're still waiting for those to come into our story. We've got Ghostbloods. We've got Taravangian as Odium. All of these huge things that we have to worry about to introduce like another one. Oh, now there's the Wind and it's different. Who is this? I was not expecting yet another powerful player I needed to worry about.
Yeah, I was wondering about this too. This more so has me questioning. The book is titled Wind and Truth. Are we going to see the Wind and also the Truth? Is the Truth going to speak to Shallan, maybe? If so, I feel like that'd be a neat little... I would trust how that works out. That seems synonymous and cool. I'm a little bit at a loss of where this can and should go, but I'm excited to find out, that's for sure.
If you combine the shards of Odium and Honor, would you get Truth? I feel like not.
No, you would not.
You'd have passionate honor, I guess. Not sure.
We already answered that, right? You get war.
You get war. What you get. Yeah. All right. Chapter 3. We get a little bit of Testament. We get a conversation with Kalak. What'd you guys take from Marshall on chapter?
The veil stuff was pretty interesting, actually. I think is it Pattern that's kind of asking her about veil? Like, is veil gone? And Shallan says, veil is now a part of me. Veil is not gone, but now veil is Shallan. I've like reabsorbed that persona back into my mainstream persona as Shallan. And then Pattern goes, so, oh, okay. Are you going to do the same with Radiant? And she goes, oh, no, not yet, at least, or something to that effect. So some explanations there. Veil's back in the fold.
Yeah, okay. And then, but Veil has dialogue in this chapter. Veil says, I'm proud of you.
That's true, isn't it?
Veil and Radiant both say, I'm proud of you. I had a very negative reaction to this on my first read. I was actually pretty upset when I read this for the first time when it came out. At the end of Rhythm of War, we have a wonderful scene of Veil and Shallan, and Veil proving to Shallan that you are as strong as me because, you know, everything that you've given me is part of you, blah, blah, blah. Veil absorbs like into Shallan. Veil's gone. And now Veil's back. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't have the same reaction, Trevor. I did like this. I didn't catch on it didn't make sense to me that Veil still talking here, having a lot of dialogue might complicate it. But I think it was pretty clear that my complaint about Shallan in maybe the last two books, Oathbringer and Rhythm of War, was a little bit with the different identities that she has. I wasn't sure how it would work, how far it would go, especially when we got introduced to, who is it? Who was the evil one? Last book, nobody.
Formless.
I was kind of questioning how much can we do this? How much can we do this? I've seen the memes out there, which are really funny, of like, is Shallan the best character in Stormlight? And then the next phase of the picture in the meme is like, Shallan isn't even the best character in Shallan, you know? There's a lot to her character, and it's very interesting. And I was kind of appreciating if we get resolution with these different identities, and they kind of the qualities that she was trying to possess when she made these, if she herself learns to embody those well enough, I think that would be a good cap to her character personally. So I had an actually pretty positive reaction to this.
I think it will get confusing if Vale continues to have dialogue, because that will confuse me as to what actually happened back at the end of Rhythm of War. But I think this section you're talking about, Trevor, is a little bit vague as to what exactly is happening there. It's like, I'm proud of you, Vale. The part of her that was Vale agreed. So as long as it continues to stay like the side of her that's more adventurous and takes initiative and can roll with the punches kind of character, if that just becomes like a side of her, I can get with that, I think. But if Vale and Shallan start to have conversations, I'm going to get confused.
Yeah. All right, the big reveal in this chapter. Ba-Ado Mishram, who we are now hunting, is in the spiritual realm. And Adolin says what the reader's thinking of. What? What?
This kind of blew my mind. And this made me extremely excited. I think this is my favorite tidbit from this whole episode that we're going to talk about. So I definitely close runner-up is Kaladin and Hoyd's conversation is spectacular. But this piece of information has my mind racing and very, very curious. So I feel like the major question is how big and where can and will this book go? Where will we go? You know, I'm referencing Hero of Ages. I feel like whenever you're reading the first book, you do not expect such cataclysmic events to happen. And in a lot of these series, it ends with a major, massive Cosmere explosion. You know, something crazy happened. And I kept thinking, you know, are we going to have that? And is it going to pay off? Or, you know, what could this look like? Are we not going to have that and just kind of have a more tame finale where we get resolution for all of our characters? I think this is where we're going to head and going to be maybe the big Sander Lynch of this book, is we're going to see into the spiritual realm. We're going to find Ba-Ado Mishram, yada yada. I don't know exactly how that will go, but it's going to be super epic. I think getting to glimpse into the spiritual realm will make me so excited, so happy. I'm so eager. I love the connection between the cognitive and physical realm. I'm really curious to see the spiritual realm. This has me so excited. If we get to see into it, I don't know. I might pee my pants. We'll see what happens.
Wow. Strong words.
This caught me a little bit by surprise, although it probably shouldn't have. We've talked about the spiritual realm before, but for some reason in my mind, the spiritual realm is just like this place of pure investiture that to step into as a mortal being is just going to obliterate you. You know, when Dalinar opens his perpendicularity, it talks about how he's like just dumping a straight conduit of energy directly from the spiritual realm. And I get the impression that that's not a place you can go. So when Kellic goes, oh yeah, we sent you to the spiritual realm. We sent her to the spiritual realm. I was like, you can do that?
They also make the distinction in Rhythm of War when Dalinar is making perpendicularities as like a battle tool that he can't do it for very long because of the spiritual realm. Like there's overwhelming power that is dangerous to him if he keeps his perpendicularity open for too long. So like with the fourth bridge at the beginning of Rhythm of War, Dalinar opens a perpendicularity for like a couple minutes to give all the, you know, the Windrunners flying around more stormlight, but then he closes it again because it's like a big deal that he's opening and closing this thing. So yeah, like put bought Ada Mishram in the spiritual realm. Is she still alive in there, or what's going on?
Yeah, she's just in a really pretty gemstone, right?
Are we now going to get reveals that there's whole societies of beings living in the spiritual realm, and there's commerce and trade and ships sailing on seas of spaghetti or whatever is happening over in the spiritual realm? Now my mind is spinning on, well, what in the world is that place going to be like?
I want to read Pattern's quote on it, because I think Pattern sums it up really well. Let's start with Shallan. Surely it's possible to find her. If the ancient radiance put it there, we should be able to take it out. You don't understand, Pattern said. You think Shadesmar is odd? Black sky, little sun, Pattern with arms and legs for perambulating? The spiritual realm is stranger by orders of magnitude. It is a place where the future blends with the present, where the past echoes like the striking of a clock. Time and distance stretch, like numbers infinitely repeating. It is where the gods live, and it baffles even some of them.
This mention of the gods has me very curious. I have a question for y'all. Crazy, crazy theory, which I hope is not true, actually. So they reference the gods here, and in our mind, the gods might refer to shards. I feel like that's the highest that we know. Shards, and then like Adonalsium in the past before he was splintered. Do you think that there are other Adonalsiums that are in the spiritual realm? Do you think there's like a host of them, these gods? I feel like that would get way too crazy and counterproductive maybe to the cosmos that's being built, but maybe. I don't know.
My gut instinct is no, simply because that goes way too close to multiverse stuff. That gets really close to like multiverse, like Adonalsium has his Cosmere over here and Adonalsium 2 has his Cosmere Prime over here. Like that gets really messy really quick. I don't think that's where this is going. I hope it's not where this is going.
I would agree, but how else are our protagonists here supposed to get over to the Skyward series or over to the other literature that's not Cosmere? How are they supposed to get to Earth? I mean, the Earth is not in the Cosmere. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Gods comes up again in chapter 4. Wit talks about gods older than yours. And this now has me intrigued. We're like starting to talk about gods again, but different than things else we know. Like way back in the day, like maybe heralds would have been in a conversation about like gods. Well, we've met them. We kind of know what they are.
Like the first two books, they meant Spren. Like Spren were gods in the first two books. And then the second two books, it was shards.
Yeah.
Now it's something else.
We've gone across the whole Cosmere now. And well, I guess I shouldn't say that. We have been through the various books that Brandon has published about the Cosmere. So we've seen quite a few things out there. And I still would probably tell you that if someone is telling me about, the gods, the great, most powerful beings out there, my brain still goes to shards, which I'm not sure these are references to that, but it's a question of like, are we talking about bigger G god than shards or smaller G gods than shards? What classification of gods are we talking about here? Because the wind seems to get put in this conversation.
Yeah, but the Hoid conversation, yeah.
Yes.
Yes. This is one of the very last times on this podcast that I will have more information than you do on this. So I can't comment.
Thankfully, Elliot, we only have to deal with his menacing threats for a couple more weeks.
Yeah, about four more weeks.
There's one more bit that Kalek says in chapter 3 before we move on. He talks about, where is it? He's kind of rambling. He collects a little bit hard to understand. Like his words are not jumbled. His sentences come out fine, but it's hard to tell like what exactly he means or if he's just trying to lie his way out of having to go with them. So I'm not quite sure whether I should take his statements at face value or not. But he seems to insinuate that when they captured Baed Omishram, something happened to the Spren and the bonds that the Night Radiant have with their Spren, which would be more than what we already know of the capture of Baed Omishram caused all the singers to lose their forms and lose their, you know, cognitive abilities, I guess I would say. So I don't know if this is new information or just drawing my focus to information we already had, but is Kellic trying to say that more than that happened, that the Knights Radiant were affected by that action? Is that how you guys took it?
I took it more of the Heralds. I think the Heralds might have been affected by it, by something that...
Yeah.
Less the Knights... I mean, maybe the Knights Radiant, which maybe led to the Recreants or whatever, but I took it as we locked Baed in a Mishram away, and that had consequences for us, which we didn't know.
Us heralds, not us Knights Radiant.
Us nine heralds, yes.
Interesting. That could be true.
It feels like there's an interesting shuffle going on with our powerful beings, our mythical beings of Roshar. At the start of the book, like at the start of the series, it was all about the heralds. The heralds are the gods. That's who they revere. All the people on Roshar, you know, those are the gods. Like we said, that escalates to shards, all sorts of stuff. Here, we get a weird shuffle. It feels like the heralds are now more important than we previously started to discard them as. And it seems like maybe our shards aren't as powerful. Like there's the wind and there's these other things which seem to be beyond them, beyond these shards, the deities that we've looked at thus far. So what are y'all's thoughts on that? Do you feel like it's... I feel like Brandon is trying to recalibrate the start of this book, almost like a pecking order or a level of importance of our characters. He's like, hold on, guys, the heralds actually are really important and we need to hold on to our thoughts of them and not just think they're all crazy lunatics that don't matter. Like, feels like we're getting a resurgence of a lot of characters, a lot of powerful characters.
So I do have thoughts on this. Over the last several books, we've gotten the heralds are crazy lunatics, which has led us to think, okay, they don't matter anymore. But what I think Brandon's doing is saying, no, hold on. They are crazy lunatics, but they matter. Just hold on. They matter. And he's trying to call back the preface of the Stormlight Archive. Is that what it's called? The prologue and the... No. The
prelude?
Thank you. The prelude. He's trying to pull back the prelude of like, these are the guys that started it. I'm doing something with them. Hold on. But... yes, they're crazy. So I think he's deliberately trying to pick them back up as, remember these guys, the guys that started it all. Yes, they're crazy. Yes, I've spent four books telling you that they're insane, but that'll change real quick. Just hold on.
I found the line that I was thinking of, and it's actually not who I thought it was. It's not dialogue between Kellic and Shallan. It's actually between Maya and Shallan, I think. And it's like five lines before the end of the chapter, and it says this: that day, the day Mishram had been captured, something deeper had happened, an event connecting humankind, honor, Spren, and the bonds. And here's the intriguing part. That line I just read is outside the quotation marks, seeming to be the narrator. Yeah, weird. It's right in a conversation between Shallan and Maya. And Shallan like almost responds to it directly, because the very next line is that we need to figure out how Mishram or her imprisonment has power over our bonds, Shallan said. So it's almost like that was like supposed to be Maya saying that, but it's definitely outside the quotation. It's odd. That's what I was thinking of, is pointing to, is the capture of Mishram affecting more than we think? And is the release of Mishram, if that is what might happen, going to have bigger impacts even than we think it might?
It's not even a typo either, because the dialogue switches off. Like, it's not that...
Right.
It, Maya says a paragraph, and then there's that paragraph out of quotes, and then Shallan says a paragraph in response to the first one. Weird. This actually transfers us pretty well into the Wit and Kaladin chapter. I want to read, or I want to talk about the gods that they talk about with Kaladin and Wit, and then we can talk about the rest of this chapter as well. It starts, the gods conversation starts like this. Long ago, Wit said softly, that rhythm guided humans across the void from one planet to the other. They followed it to reach your world. One of the rhythms of Roshar, Syl said, with a nod, made into a song with the tones of the gods. Gods older than yours, Wit said from beside Kaladin on the couch. When you first played for us, Kaladin said, I could swear the sound came back. You'd play, then talk. The song would continue to echo. How did you do that? I didn't, Wit said. So Wit is naming the wind, or maybe Roshar, as a god older than Honor and Odium, which we knew already, but like I said earlier, is kind of finally in the text that Honor and Roshar predates Honor, Odium, and Cultivation. So I don't know. What'd you guys make of that?
I have a couple thoughts. Largely this whole gods thing, that's what I'm expecting to learn this book. Maybe I'm wrong. We waited forever to find answers to other topics, so maybe we won't find out about this at all. But I have a good feeling that we are going to get answers to what these gods are that Hoyt is referring to. There's something else that I want to key into, and it's this rhythm that leads the people to other planets. I think it's really interesting in this series that there's been many nods to music and rhythms. There's the rhythm that all the Parshmen hear. They have these songs. I think, aren't we told previously that these songs are from Roshar itself?
That's how the singers refer to it. The singers refer to it as hearing Roshar, not hearing Odium or hearing Honor, hearing Roshar.
Interesting. I keep having this thought in the back of my head whenever I read these points. So we had the reveal last book in Rhythm of War about music and tones drawing out investiture. I feel like this is going to really culminate. I wonder if that's how Ba-Ado Mishram may get out of the spiritual realm. I don't know if that's possible, but maybe there's a tune or a tone. I don't know. But I think it's very interesting that this keeps coming up, and it's something that hasn't been a part of anything else in the Cosmere. So I keep thinking that this Roshar or this god thing that we keep getting mentioned to is the embodiment of music or something along those lines. I know that there's a big theory out there in Tolkien world that Tom Bombadil is the embodiment of the music of the Ainur, which is really a mouthful. But I'm wondering if we're going to get some larger fantastical music significance or embodiment. I kind of don't feel like that's where we're headed realistically, but I mean, we've had a lot of significant, the cymatics, the investiture pulling. There's been a lot of the singers, obviously. There's been a lot to do with rhythms and tones and vibrations. So I think it's plausible.
I should have kept reading because there's a better quote just a little bit further down the page. Let me read it for you. The wind, Kaladin guessed. The wind was listening. Maybe you can be salvaged after all, Wit smiled. Is the wind a god? Kaladin asked. When this world was created, long before honor, cultivation, or odium arrived, Adonalsium, 1 point for Paul, left something behind on it. Sometimes it's called the old magic. That term is applied to the Night Watcher, who came with cultivation's efforts from one of those ancient spren. Listen to the wind when it speaks, Kaladin. It's weaker than it once was, but it has seen so very much. So the Night Watcher actually predates cultivation, which is an interesting side point, but there's specific things left on Roshar, maybe the unmade, or whatever else you want to put in there, but that are referred to as gods.
And the wind is very much in this conversation too. That's where the conversation started from where you read. But I'm also thinking of things like the sibling. It's almost like there's a category of spren that perhaps were on Roshar before Shards of Adonalsium showed up. And then these kind of highest level of power spren have become maybe the powerful beings we're talking about in all these conversations. Night Watcher, Stormfather, Sibling, Unmade. Maybe all of these came from a category of powerful spren of Roshar.
What if the dude who sits in his little pond, you know what I'm talking about? That big old spren, the big whale.
You think
he's in that category too, and he's just kind of a lazy Kusakesh. Kusakesh, that's
maybe.
Right. Kusakesh, maybe. He's been an outlier, so who knows?
Or you could even throw like Sleepless in there too, because they don't really fit into anything else. Sleepless or like Dawn Shards, I feel like you could fit in there maybe. I don't know.
Paul, a second ago you mentioned Tolkien, and you beat me to the punch. I was actually going to go Tolkien as well, but a slightly different direction with this whole music thing. Wit kind of asks, Kaladin asks Wit just a few more lines down from where you were just reading, Trevor, like, why do I need to care about music? What does music have to do with me? And he gets a little bit of a like response about, well, the importance of art. But then at the same time, I can't help but feel that there's something more to this. Wit like leaves him with this, that flute and the ability to speak to Roshar through the manner that Roshar knows best, perhaps of rhythms and songs and things like that, might become important. And it made me think of, I don't know, if you guys remember your Silmarillion, there's a scene in the Silmarillion where Finrod and Sauron have a song battle.
It's one of my favorites.
Finrod, who's the older brother of Galadriel, he's like one of the great heroes of the Silmarillion, right? Goes up against Sauron, one of the biggest.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, that's what we're all about here, and they battle through song. And I just can't help but think, is Kaladin going to need to know that flute to battle something with a song?
All right, you ready for my prediction?
Hit us.
I think the Shattered Planes shattered themselves. They were convinced through song to shatter. Roshar was convinced to break something that was on her via song, via cymatics.
Okay. I was going to say, you know how you technically you can break glass with high enough and loud enough pitch note.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we just have that. Yeah. Maybe Roshar hit a super high note, cracked the planes.
Oops.
There we are. Yeah. It turns out that Roshar loves opera music. And I think Kaladin's flute is going to lead to opening in the production of the first opera, which is when Roshar will naturally heal the planes. It's all coming together.
Which he refound last book in the book or in the chapter titled Mercy. Just want to pull that back up. Mercy's on Roshar.
You heard it here first.
I missed that. Whoops.
Actually, you forgot like about you said, my whole. Half the people listening to us have already read the whole book, so they heard it long before they heard it here. But yeah,
heard it here heard second.
It yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I that Trevor, I do remember your theory. Did you say that Mercy was mentioned in?
So at the end of Rhythm of War, I had this big old theory of Tien didn't actually die. Well, Tien did die, but then picked up the shard Mercy because I had several reasons, but one of the reasons was at the end of Rhythm of War, Kaladin finds Tien's horse and the flute that he left in the war camps, and the title of that chapter is called Mercy. But anyway.
Interesting. It's all coming back.
Virtue. Let's talk about Virtue. Hoyd talks about Virtue. Actually, he talks to it first with Shallan, I believe. Shallan is scared of herself, as she has been for many books now. And the line she gives to Hoyd is, she talks to Hoyd about formless, Paul, of her little persona from last book. And she says, well, I'm scared because I know I'm capable of that now. And then Hoyd says, well, yeah, of course you're capable of that. That's what makes being good a virtue. Being what makes it a choice. Like, of course you're capable of that. But the fact that you are capable of that makes you stronger because it makes what you're doing a choice, which I thought was cool.
It is really, really cool. And Trevor, do you mind if I actually read that quote? I actually noted that down because thus far, we're four chapters in. Thus far, it's my favorite quote of the book, and I thought it was really, really good, and I wanted to read it. It says, Wit chuckled, then stepped back and threw his hands up, anger spren vanishing and glory spren, tiny spheres of golden light bursting around him. A virtue is something that is valuable even if it gives you nothing. A virtue persists without payment or compensation. Positive thinking is great, vital, useful, but it has to remain so even if it gets you nothing. Belief, truth, honor. If these exist only to get you something, you've missed the storming point.
Isn't that his conversation with Kaladin later?
Is that a different part?
No, I mean, it's in this episode, but
yeah.
He talks with Shallan first in chapter 3, and then he talks with Kaladin in chapter 4, which we'll get to. But I wanted to highlight this Shallan quote first.
Either way, it's a good quote. So
it is a good quote. Yes, then we'll come back to it.
He builds on himself. You're right. He has a conversation with Shallan, and then he goes and says what you just read there, Paul, with Kaladin. In the Shallan section for me, he summed it up as, I think he kind of referred to it as the cost of heroism. There's a cost to making the choice to do
The cost of heroism.
I didn't pay more attention to those chapter titles. So title of the chapter is Cost of Heroism. And yeah, that sums it up really, really well. And it was a good encouragement for Shallan, I think, to say, like, yeah, it is hard, but you're choosing the difficult path, and that doesn't make it wrong. The difficult path is actually the honorable one because it's the path of heroism. And yeah, it's going to be hard, like, by definition. And then that builds into, I think, the virtue discussion he has with Kaladin.
Okay, now we can talk about Kaladin. Yes, Kaladin has this discussion with Hoyd, and they lead it with hope. Hope is a virtue, which, I don't know, we could talk for a long time about that, but specifically talking to Kaladin about hope, I think, is really important, because Kaladin, throughout many books, in fact, in Rhythm of War, he has this huge regression in his depression battle. He almost... You could even argue he does succumb to it at the end of Rhythm of War and is only saved by Dalinar. But holding on to hope, even if you may not make it out alive, which, another side note, this conversation seems rather final with Wit, which we can talk about after this. But hope is a virtue. What do you guys think?
I mean, Paul has led us right into it. I think the hope is a virtue. Absolutely agree. Virtue as a virtue. Absolutely agree. He gives us a nice definition, which Paul, you read. The definition, what makes something a virtue, is the fact that it gives you nothing. The fact that it is good for its own sake. It doesn't get you anything. There's a lot of things that we do in life that aren't wrong, but we do them to get something else. Maybe we go to work because it gets us money so that we can buy other things we want. Going to work is not a virtue. But there are things that are virtues, that are good for no other reason than they are worth doing or worth being. And Hoyd's kind of touching on that, which I think is a really cool conversation.
I absolutely love this. I feel like it's well established on this podcast that Elliot and I are suckers for the big theme moments, the positive themes in these books. And straight out of the gate, chapters 3 and 4 are knocking it out of the park. I feel so lucky to get to read these moments with Wit and our two protagonists back to back. Like, this is so rich and good, and it just goes such a long way. Absolutely spectacular. I don't have anything to add other than it's so good. I mentioned at the start of this episode that I feel lucky now, where I may have felt not discouraged, but felt like, you know, reading this book so slow is going to be such a drag. I'm going to want to read. But savoring this has been so sweet already, just the first couple chapters. And it's because of parts like this.
I want to talk about Hoyd real quick. In Oathbringer, Hoyd has a conversation with Shallan, the girl who stood up. And Shallan gets kind of anxious with Hoyd. It's like, okay, just tell me what the moral is. I need to know the moral. Let's move on. And Hoyd says, I don't give you the morals. I just tell the stories. What happened to that Hoyd? Because this Hoyd seems to be just saying it how it is. These are virtues. These are worth your time. Like he says, the passions are not worth your time. Hope is worth your time. That's the whole chapter. And he doesn't pretend to not say that. So what's changed with Hoyd?
Is this a result of Hoyd's memories being taken at the end of Rhythm of War? Maybe. We have a moment where Todium steals some of Hoyd's memories, and he can't do things like perfect pitch or things like that. And it's definitely not hinted to here at all. So it seems like just an abrupt change. But I mean, maybe that's the justification for it. Maybe he took the part of Wit that is too cantankerous to be helpful. And now Hoyd is actually doing good. He's really directly motivating. You're right, Trevor. He said before, I just tell the stories. I leave the interpretation to the listeners. But here he's like, yep, nope, this is what it is. I'm not even going to bother with a dog and the dragon type story. I'm just going to tell you hope is a virtue, and this is what a virtue is, and this is why it's important. Go on, have your fun. I think you also mentioned that this feels like a conclusory conversation between Hoyd and these two characters, and I would happen to agree. This feels like the calm and the heartwarming before the storm that's up ahead.
Well, Kaladin says that in the chapter. Kaladin's like, Hoyd, you're talking as if one of us isn't returning from this little quest. And Hoyd says, yep. And then Kaladin says, well, one of us is immortal, the other one's not. And then Hoyd's like, well, immortality is kind of like a in quotes thing these days. They don't make it like they used to. And so I quite enjoyed that discussion back and forth. But before this chapter, I thought Kaladin was pretty safe in this book, I'll be honest. I'm not sure I feel that way anymore.
You know, I still feel like he's a bit safe. So is this when Hoyt also mentions that Jasnah would be a reasonable replacement for him? Is that where this is mentioned?
That's before, and I actually want to read that real quick. So we can talk about the finality here in a second, but okay. I do actually want to read that part because of something else. A virtue is something, even if it's valuable, it gives you nothing. That's a storming point, blah, blah, blah. Okay. It took me a long time to learn. I'll start here. This is where Jasnah is wrong about Hope. Smart though she is in so many ways. If hope doesn't mean anything to you when you lose, then it wasn't even a virtue in the first place. It took me a long time to learn that, and I finally did so from the writings of a man who lost every belief he thought he had, then started over new. Sounds like someone wise, Syl said. Oh, Sazed is among the best. Hope I get to meet him someday. When you do, Kaladin said, maybe some of his wisdom will rub off. What a great way to reference Mistborn. Not the biggest Mistborn fan, but great reference.
Sazed mention is always good.
Sazed mention.
And a great callback, too, to the debate that we had in the latter parts of Rhythm of War, where Jasnah was chiding, I want to say it was Dalinar, on hope is just for those that wish things were better. And Dalinar and Wit kind of rebut that with, no, hope is a lot more than that. And I think we spent a good chunk of an episode at the end of Rhythm of War talking about exactly that, and it's coming up here again.
Random thing to point out, we went to Dragonsteel 2 years ago. Elliot and I did. I think Trevor went last year as well. The year we went, Brandon read a live chapter or two. Was this one of the ones that he read? Because I asked that because I remember him mentioning Sazed. And I know who that was. I knew who that was, and I was kind of blown away. And I specifically remembered that, and I couldn't say anything about it because I don't believe Elliot had read Era 1 of Mistborn yet. But I was pretty baffled.
Yes. Short answer, yes. This chapter was read at Dragonsteel when we went. There were large parts of it omitted. But yes, Sazed was mentioned by name to loud cheers in the audience hall. And yes, Paul knew who that was. Ellie did not.
Back to the, is this goodbye?
Yeah.
It definitely feels like it. Syl is part of this conversation too. And Syl responds back to one of Wit's lines where he's like laying all this out. And her response is, practice the flute, get Roshar to listen to us, help Ishar, don't come back. Exactly, Wit said. Now go. The world needs the two of you. That sure feels like a, are we going to see Wit again at all?
I think we will. I don't know if Kaladin will.
I'm assuming, given how far we are into this book, that we will see Hoyt again. I don't know when, but I'm assuming we will see him again. But with this, is it time to mention it? I wanted to mention that he throws Jasnah out as a potential, and I can't quote it exactly, but essentially as a replacement for him as Wit if something were to happen to him. Is that right? I was very intrigued at this idea, and it made me think that this conversation between Kaladin and Hoyd might mean that something happens to Hoyd rather than Kaladin. That's how I felt at the end of this chapter, and it really had my mind racing.
I think it was more philosophical than that. They bring up the fact that Jasnah doesn't believe in hope, and so Wit says, oh yeah, that would make Jasnah a really good Wit because she's hopeless and existential all the time. And I think it's kind of just more of a quip than anything.
Maybe you're right. I think I read into it too much, but it definitely got my mind racing because I've always felt it was a bit odd that Hoyd and Jasnah were in a relationship. I just felt like it was a tad bizarre And I kept thinking that there might be an additional purpose to it. And I'm like, who knows? I don't know. I think I'm taking it too far, but I'm curious if that ever comes up again.
So what you're saying is Jasnah is the wit of Era 2 Stormlight, where she's going to be the one bouncing around spouting bits of random wisdom at characters through Era 2.
Yeah, essentially, if that were to happen. I've always had this thought that there's so much mention of the term wit as well mm-hmm. as it being his name, that maybe Hoid is a pseudo shard or something. He's obviously got so much investiture and power that I've had this thought of. If he died, could someone inherit that? I don't know. I feel like that is still unlikely, but it has me thinking. And for the first time ever, I've considered, what if Hoid dies? What do we do?
That's a good question. I would say Sigzil would be a candidate, but I think Sunlit might disqualify him. Anything else?
I think we got it. Paul said it. I'm very excited by these early chapters of Wind and Truth. It's been a few like surprises in maybe the tone of the story, perhaps, or some of the hints of where we're going with this new wind character and the spiritual realm and all this, but I'm very much enjoying these first few chapters we've gotten.
Any bingo board checks besides one that Adonalsia mentioned? We need 7 for Paul, I think.
I don't think there's anything we're definitively marking off here, but...
Something that I will like to acknowledge, but I knew about it when I made the bingo board, is one of the first lines of Chapter 2. Teft kind of speaks dialogue in Kaladin's head. Kind of. There's not quotes around it, so I'm not going to count it for my bingo board. But if I don't get a bingo, and that's why, I'm going to come back to this and make an argument for it.
We might have a few of those, like, almost kind of things. Like, on my bingo board, I don't have it in front of me, but it's like someone says, honor is not dead.
Mm.
And Kalek says, like, pretty much that. But not quite exactly those, like, 4 words exactly in one of these chapters.
I'm still expecting to see a third storm. A third type of high storm thing.
They mentioned a storm in this.
Oh, yeah.
Like a couple times in the book thus far already.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling good about that, but we can't cross it off yet.
I have 3 or more Colins die on mine. If Radiant dies, does that count?
No. No cheating.
If Vale dies, does that count?
Nah. Well, did Vale die in this book? If we're calling her dead? Yeah.
All right. Let's close it there and reconvene next week. We will be doing chapters, 5, 6, and 7 for next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Ciao. On we go.